All right. Our next case is 11-1392, JNT Properties, LLC versus KeyBank National Association. For the appellant, Mr. Sesay.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Ben Sesay, and with my partner, Hugh Stanley, we represent appellant KeyBank National Association in this matter.
Your Honor, Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
This case concerns contract law, not statutory law, and gives this court an opportunity to confirm that commercial notes negotiated by sophisticated parties, like all other contracts, must be construed as a whole and given reasonable effect to each of the terms. In order to finance the purchase of a business, JNT Properties, its lawyer, and its accountants negotiated a sophisticated commercial lending package with KeyBank that included two small business association loans and the 20-year first mortgage variable interest rate note at issue in this appeal. Interest is the cost to JNT Properties for borrowing this money.
Counsel, I think we're all familiar with the facts of the case. The crux from what I've read is that it was quoted at a certain interest rate. I believe it was 5% plus 3.98.
It was an index, Your Honor, plus 325 basis points, which was...
Plus what?
325 basis points,
okay.
Or plus 3.25%.
Okay.
And that resulted in an initial interest rate of 8.93%.
8.9, but the basis of the configuration of the per annum, the year, resulted in a higher annual percentage rate. Is that correct?
No, we don't believe it resulted in a higher rate. The rate, 8.93%, was used to calculate the dollar amount of interest. And I think the confusion in this case is caused by the difference between the amount of interest payable and the annual interest rate. The stated interest rate is used in the 365-360 language. That's one of three methods to compute interest.
All right, but my point is that just based on personal experience, when you get a mortgage rate and you see what the percentage rate is, and then they give you the annual percentage rate, which is a little bit of a bump up. But that's clearly spelled out in the documents when you're purchasing a home, when you get a mortgage on a home. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, but I think here is what we need to focus on, and you raise an important point, Your Honor, which is you mentioned the annual percentage rate. That's part of the disclosures required by the Truth in Lending Act. That includes the additional amount of money, and of course Congress passed that law because the contract law principles that govern here do not require disclosure of that additional amount. Now, what was done in this note is we took one of the three methods for computing interest, the 365-360 method, as opposed to the 360 method, as opposed to the 365-360 method, and we spelled out in the note that that was going to be the method by which interest would be accrued under a per annum rate. And one of the ironic things about the theory in this case is the term per annum has been around for hundreds of years, just like the three separate methods for computing interest. And if there really was a conflict, or if the 365-360 method really altered the per annum rate, it would not have taken 200 years for courts to reach that conclusion. The reason for the disclosures Your Honor referred to is that Congress recognized that that kind of additional information is not required under general contract principles. Here you have a note that tells the borrower, and it's a note, by the way, that the borrower, if you look at page 5 of the note, the bold language above the signature says that the borrower read and understood all of the terms of the note, including the variable interest rate provisions, and agreed to be bound by its terms.
All right. Now, it was 8.93% on paper, correct?
Yes.
But it really turned out to be 9.03%?
Your Honor, what really—
Based on the 365-360 computation—
Let me answer your question this way. It is true that the 365-360 method results in a higher yield.
And that is 9.03%.
And that yield can be expressed if you apply a baseline assumption that a 365-365 method is the norm, which we submit is not appropriate in the commercial lending context. But if you apply that as the norm, then you could express it as an increase in the effective interest rate.
Well, what does annum mean? What does annum mean? What does that word mean?
Per annum means by the year or annually.
Annum.
Annually.
Not what?
Annually.
Meaning 1 year, right?
Meaning an annual interest rate, yes.
No, I ask you, what does the word annum mean?
Year. By the year. Per annum
and
means by the...
What, how many days are there in a year?
Well, in the note, it defines...
No, I'm asking you pretty simple questions. How many days are there in a year?
There are, in a calendar year, there are 365 point some odd days.
All right.
And that's why we have leap years of 366
right.
once every
Understood
4 years.
Understood that.
Now, the note, to your honor's point, the note defines the daily interest factor based on a 360-day year. And the reason, by the way, for the different methods is since there is not even a full 365-point-some days, you cannot calculate equal daily and equal monthly interest charges. And so hundreds of years ago, banks developed these three separate methods for computing interest to deal with that anomaly. And that's been well understood by all of the courts that have addressed
this. And I don't think that the way, you know, whether it's 365, 360, 365, 365, whatever. I know that the appellees here are disputing the per annum as being a misleading term. I understand that. My question, though, focuses on if the 8.93% was written in the document that was signed by the JTN or JNT, but for the first 5 years, it was going to be an effective interest rate of 9.03. Is that correct?
Your Honor, it's correct that you can construe the increase in the yield as an effect increase in the effective interest rate, or
based
as an
on the 360 computation, they're going to end up paying 9.03% at least for the first 5 years. Is that a fair statement?
No, Your Honor, because they are paying the 8.93% interest calculated by the 365-360 method.
What does that work out to be? What does that work out to be?
It works out. I don't know the exact amount of interest they pay over the 5 years.
I'm not talking about the gross amount. I'm talking about the rate, the percentage.
The rate is always the stated rate in the note. That is the rate that is used in the calculation.
Which is what?
8.93%.
Where's the 9.03 figure come in?
That is their mathematical reinterpretation of the increased yield, which they claim results in an effective interest rate, which is not present anywhere in the note of 9.013%.
No, it's not present in the note. That's the issue. Is there an effective yield based on 9.03%?
There is a yield based on 8.93%. If the
365 works out to 9.03%.
It would be 9.03% if the 365-365 method were used. And here is the difficulty I have with that analysis, Your Honor. When you look at a method that is the predominant method in commercial lending, okay, and that's not been disputed by any of the courts, saying that it increases the interest rate, I think, gets matters exactly backwards. Because if everybody uses this method, then really what you're saying is if you use the 365-365 method, you get a reduction in the rate. I don't think it's fair to look at this language out of context, out of the way it's used in the commercial lending world, and assume that what's happening here is an increase in the effective interest rate.
So can you explain it then? Because the Chief Justice is, I think, trying to get the answer we all want to know. The contract says 8.93% per annum. And then there's an allegation that the effective yield is 9.03%. How does the 365-360 work in actuality for the annual interest rate yield?
Here's what happens. You take the 8.93%, you divide it by 360, multiply it by the principal balance. That gives you a daily interest factor. And that daily interest factor is critical. Because in the mortgage context, you pay interest on a monthly basis. And this particular note gave J&T Properties the option to prepay up to 20% in any 1 year, at which point the interest rate would reset. So it's not sufficient to simply say at the end of the year you will get a particular amount. You need a daily interest factor, and the note clearly says that's how the factor is calculated. Now, once you have that factor, you then apply that factor to every day within the month that that balance is outstanding.
So what you're saying is that the 8.93 is really an element of the formula that was agreed to by the parties in the language regarding the interest computation. Is that right?
Precisely, Your Honor.
Okay, so it's not 8.93 is what you're going to pay over the year. That's not what was agreed to. What you're saying is that the 8.93 is factored into the interest computation, which is in that specific paragraph talking about the formula that you just described.
That's right, Your Honor. The bargain entered into by the parties and approved by their counsel was that the 8.93% would be used to calculate the annual interest charge.
And so the fact that it might have turned out to be 9.03 interest effectively, that's not a problem because that was what it was agreed to by the parties in this particular formula.
Exactly, and that's what every other appellate court has held that has addressed the issue. You cannot create an ambiguity in the language through mathematical formulas. You cannot alter the terms of the note, including the term specifying a 365-360 method through different mathematical computations.
How would the argument change if you had applied a 365-365 basis in this contract instead of the 365-360?
How would the Our argument would remain that whatever it is, whatever formula is set forth in the note is the formula that is required because there.
If you had applied a 365-365 basis, would you end up with the 903 or would you end up with 8.93?
The calculation would result in a dollar amount of interest that would be consistent with the 8.93. You would not be able to extrapolate
a 9.03. So the basis of the argument that has been presented here is the formula that was chosen to apply the annual interest rate and the inverted fraction of 365 over 360 as opposed to 365 over 365. And that results in a different yield, larger for the bank.
Right. It results in a larger yield. And the issue is, what yield did the note require? And we submit that the note clearly and unambiguously required a yield computed under the 365-360
And had the parties agreed, as Justice Lanzinger was getting to, on a formula 365 over 365, then the annual yield would not have been 903, it would have been 8.93.
The annual yield would have been consistent with the 8.93 rate under that series of questions. Yes,
thank
Your
you,
Honor.
Sir.
Counsel, there was some discussion at the beginning of this about mortgage loans. I assume that was home mortgage loans in which there are some extra disclosures. Now, it's my understanding this is a commercial loan. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
There was not the other disclosure that you might find in a home mortgage loan that provides the effective interest rate.
That's correct, Your Honor. The negotiations between J&T Properties and KeyBank resulted in the 8.93% rate. It resulted in a term that permitted us to charge interest using that rate by the 365-360 method. Their lawyer said, represented in an opinion letter, that he had conducted all investigations he deemed necessary to opine on the enforceability of that language, and he gave the opinion that the language of the note, which included that provision, was enforceable in accordance with its terms. Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Coburna.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Coburna. I represent J&T Properties, LLC. The formula that was just described by counsel as the 365-360 basis is not the formula that is included in this note. At least six judges in Ohio between this case and the Eli Enterprises case have looked at this language in this note and correctly found it to be unintelligible. It doesn't make sense on its face. It purports
well,
to calculate.
If that's the case, why? What happened to legal counsel looking at this document? They let their client sign an unintelligible document? Is that what you're telling me?
In this case, counsel did not understand that provision.
And is this the type of language used in thousands of commercial contracts all over the country?
This particular note is laser pro language created by a company out of, I think, Illinois called Harland that is no longer in its effect. They fixed the defective language in this note back in 2008. This note hasn't been used in 4 years.
Okay, but has this language in peers and thousands of notes before this language was fixed?
Thousands or hundreds, certainly. Okay. Many borrowers have signed this
and
note.
And this is was commercially acceptable language for a long, long period of time before this lawsuit, correct?
I think this note was in place for about 10 years. We don't think it's commercially acceptable for a bank to include language that doesn't make sense.
And the parties had lawyers. They're commercial. They're not homeowners who don't understand the finances. The parties had lawyers. They had accountants. They could look at this language, and they could figure out for themselves what it meant. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I agree with that. I would also say that just because there were lawyers involved in a commercial transaction doesn't mean that we don't have to look at the language of the contract.
And you're presumed to understand what you're signing, are you not?
You are presumed, but if the language is unintelligible, it's unintelligible. The trial court in this case, many years later, found that this language was unintelligible.
You talk about six judges. They're all involved in this one case, the six judges.
In the Eli Enterprises case as well, Your Honor.
And no other court yet has made the decision that this court made.
No other Supreme Court has. I can tell you that we cited in our supplemental authorities cases out of Missouri, out of Idaho, applying Washington law, and out of Texas as well, that have looked at this exact same language and said it does not do what the bank says it was intended to do.
And if you are successful, then the putative class action will go forward on thousands of contracts against who knows how many banks.
This is a case against KeyBank with regard to borrowers who signed this form note. Your Honor, the real problem here is that objectively the language of this note does not change the interest rate from 8.93%.
And isn't the real problem the lawyer? Shouldn't they be suing their lawyer for letting them sign this document instead of suing a bank?
But the law in Ohio remains, Your Honor, that when something specifies a per annum interest rate,
Could you speak into the microphone? I can't hear you.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Thank you.
If a promissory note specifies a per annum interest rate, that for as long as Ohio has been a state in this union, that has meant 365 days of interest. And therefore, the Court of Appeals got it right when it said, if we give that language its plain and ordinary meaning, it is incumbent upon the bank to point to other
language. So you're saying that the formula of 365, that has not been used. It's always been 365, 365.
That's not what I'm saying, Your Honor. I think that banks know how to draft contract language that properly and intelligibly tell a borrower that their interest rate is going to be changed from this to this, and it's not really the per annum interest rate. They know how to do that.
What did your client not get that they bargained to get?
My client agreed to pay 8.93% per annum interest on this note. Per annum, meaning what everybody understands it to be, and that is 365-day years. If the bank wants to charge more interest than that, if the bank wants to change that rate, then it's incumbent on the bank to do it clearly and unambiguously in the contract, not some unintelligible formula that on its face doesn't make sense. This borrower can't comply with this provision.
Except, counsel, when you say it's unintelligible, I'm looking at the language from the promissory note. It says the annual interest rate for this note is computed on a 365-360 basis. That is, by applying the ratio of the annual interest rate over a year of 365 days multiplied by the outstanding principal balance. What is unintelligible about that?
That formula says it's calculating an annual interest rate, a percentage rate.
On 360 days.
The product of that formula is not an interest rate, Your Honor. It's a dollar amount, number one. Number two, it's purporting to divide the annual interest rate by an annual interest rate. It's purporting to divide itself by itself to come. It's a mathematical impossibility. The trial court
was right
about that.
So you're saying that KeyBank should bear the burden of your client's former counsel not understanding the contract, which he gave a letter saying that everything was in order, that his client understood what he was signing?
I think that KeyBank was the drafter of this contract language and is now seeking this court to rewrite the contract to say what it says now it meant to include in the contract.
Is KeyBank seeking to rewrite it, or is your client seeking to rewrite it?
KeyBank is seeking to rewrite it. The language is unintelligible. You can't enforce that language unless you rewrite it like the trial court did. Think about what the trial court did here to grant summary judgment to the bank in the first place. It took a small fraction of a larger provision that it already determined to be unintelligible on its face. It then reworded it. It disregarded the rest. It imputed to the borrower knowledge that the bank must have meant to include something else and granted summary judgment in favor of the drafter of the defective language. We don't think that's a proper use of Rule 56. We think that if a bank wants to charge more interest, the bank has an obligation to clearly and unambiguously state what it is doing, and not through some unintelligible point that cannot be understood. A borrower cannot reasonably...
Are you alleging fraud?
I'm sorry?
Are you alleging fraud?
No, this is a breach of contract case, Your Honor.
Okay. If you've got a breach of contract, and it's a contract your client didn't understand, we don't rewrite bad contracts. We write contracts that maybe be fraudulent or there's not a meeting of the minds. But you had counsel, you signed a contract, there was no fraud. You want a different deal now.
We're not.
What's your legal basis for a different deal? That some judge couldn't understand this language that's been used commercially for a long time by a lot of banks? That's the basis?
We're asking for the ordinary meaning of the word per annum to maintain that meaning.
But they maintain the ordinary meaning of per annum has to be read in context with the 360-365 formula. You can't do it in a mathematical computation. You have to do it in a formula.
And that's what the Court of Appeals in this case tried to do. It tried to read it in context with this language that doesn't make any sense.
The fact that they didn't understand it doesn't necessarily mean that your commercial client with the lawyer didn't understand it.
The language can't be understood. Why
did you sign it?
I'm not saying that language in contracts, if there's lawyers involved in a contract, they still end up with ambiguous contract language, sometimes because of that. That doesn't mean we don't have to deal with the problem that the language doesn't do what the bank says it's supposed to do. The monthly payment amount on the first page of this note, $3,300 and whatever dollars, is consistent with 8.93% interest, not 9.05% interest. If this man had brought with him, Mr. Travis, had brought with him a mortgage calculator to the closing of this transaction, calculated his monthly interest payment of $3,000 and made every payment for 240 payments, he would conclude that I'm being charged 8.93% interest. The fact of the matter is, if this borrower made all 240 payments at the amount specified on the front page of the note, he would end up with a balloon payment of about $20,000 that is not reflected in this note at all. The problem with the language is that the bank is using a defective formula to justify charging this borrower more interest than what the note says. We just think the Court of Appeals got it right when they say...
But, counsel, to your point that you just said, they're going to get to the end of the contract and be hit with a balloon payment. The interest rate will be adjusted, and they say July 2012, 17, and 2022 to reflect the current index defined, et cetera. This is variable, and that is one of the key considerations here, is that every 5 years this is going to be reviewed. So it's not you signed it and you're going to have to live with this for the next 20 years or whatever. So there is an understanding between the parties that there's flexibility here, that there's a review, that there is an update of what's going to happen every 5 years. Would you agree with that?
Well, there is. It's not necessarily a review. It's an automatic change of what the per annum interest rate is.
But your client will be informed on what the balance is every 5 years.
And every 5 years.
So they're not going to get hit at the end of the term with a whammy balloon payment that they don't understand.
They will, because when the bank applies the formula and takes the index and adds 3.25% to it, then the bank on top of that is going to add 1.14% because of this alleged formula that's contained in the note.
And if you could figure that out, why couldn't the counsel advising the client say, okay, under this formula, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have a balloon payment at the end and advise your client of that.
Again, Your Honor, all I can say is that...
Well, you figured it out.
All I can say is that the simple fact that there was a lawyer advising the client in this case does not change the language in this contract from being unintelligible to intelligible. It does not change it from...
It might change who your party should be sued. It might change the difference between suing the bank and suing their lawyer for malpractice.
I mean, you keep telling us your client signed an unintelligible contract with a lawyer at his side. Aren't you aiming at the wrong party with that sort of an allegation?
I still think we have to apply the rules of construction when we're looking at contract language. We have a provision in the contract which says per annum interest rate. That's 365
days.
They say
the ratio of the annual interest rate over a year of 360 days. It says it in bold print right there when they're talking about the variable interest rate and the payments. It clearly is part of the contract. Of the, it says in the promissory note, parens underneath, variable rate. Those are pretty important terms to be scrutinized. Would you not agree?
I would agree.
And if your client was asked after he signed it or before he signed it, what's a year mean according to this contract? Not what's a year mean according from your birthday to the next birthday. What's a year mean with regards to this promissory note? You're saying that he would have said 365 days?
I think he would have said 365
Even though it says
days.
In black and white, in bold, over a year of 360 days.
The reference to 360 days in that formula is a small fragment of a word that's contained in a provision that overall is unintelligible and doesn't make any sense.
It's part
Honor.
Of a formula. We're going to use 360 as part of this formula.
And it says we're going to calculate an annual interest rate. So if you're a borrower looking at this note and you're going to decide how much interest you have to pay, you can't look at this language and comply with that provision. It purports to calculate an annual interest rate, and it does not calculate a rate of any kind. It produces a dollar amount of interest. It purports to modify it purports to divide an annual interest rate by an annual interest rate, mathematically impossible. There's a reason that the bank has filed an action for reformation in this case, Your Honor. There's a reason they've called this language poorly constructed, inartful, clumsy, and errant expression. There's a reason they fixed this language so that it now very clearly at the top says 8.93% per annum in the fixed note, 8.3 per annum fixed note based on a year of 360 days computed in accordance with the formula below, and they rewrote the formula so that it no longer purports to calculate an annual interest rate and correctly says what's doing. Banks know how to do this. And what they're doing is extracting 5 extra days of interest from the borrowers based on language which doesn't even make sense on its face. We think that under ordinary rules of contract construction, if a promissory note says per annum, that's what it means unless the bank can show language that gives it the right to charge more. This one does not. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sasse, you have a little over a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think it's important to recognize that we have spent the last 15 minutes discussing whether or not this provision is unintelligible, because if it is not, then it must be enforced. And what I think is missing from the unintelligibility analysis is an analysis of the language as a whole. The first clause contains the term 365-360. Now, we know that term is a term of art, and we know it from the plaintiff's own complaint. They refer to that term 15 separate times without ever defining it and request declaratory and injunctive relief specifically framed around the 365-360 method. So they know full well what it means, and they know full well what it means in isolation. And the second critical part, Justice McGee Brown, picking up on your question, is that the second clause is an explanation of the first. It's not a mathematical formula. If you look at page 9 of the appellate opinion, appendix page 15, you'll notice that when the court purports to find this language unintelligible, they remove by ellipsis the term 365-360, and they remove by ellipsis the introduction to the second clause, which says that is comma, which is classic language of explanation. Now, the mathematical calculation that occurs in the second clause of that note is entirely consistent with the 365-360 method. And all you need to do to figure that out is look at footnote 1 of the appellate opinion where they describe what a 365-360 calculation is.
Is the bank still using this note, this language in their notes?
The bank is not still using this particular language in its notes, no, Your Honor.
What have they gone to?
It's a little more complicated than that because this language was borrowed from a LaserPro form note, but it wasn't in the form KeyBank notes in the first place. Having said that, the notes that we use do not include the term rate in the clause indicating that annual interest is computed on a 365-360 basis.
Do they calculate interest on a 365-360 basis today?
They do in the commercial lending context, Your Honor.
Okay.
consistent with almost every member of the Ohio Bankers
League.
Are
there other methods other than the 365, 360 in the commercial context that they utilize?
Those methods may be used rarely when the term is negotiated. By and large, consistent with what the amicus has represented, commercial lending mortgages accrue interest on a 365, 360 basis.
Thank you.
We think this language is clear enough to be understood by a sophisticated commercial party represented by counsel, and we request that the judgment be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.